What do I say?
Oh my god. You can tell that we haven't recorded for a couple of weeks already. All right. This is Andy Ray with Area Reptiles.
This is Riley Jimison of Riley's Reptiles.
Welcome
to the Reptile Room Podcast.
Yeah. I like it.
That sounded good.
Yeah, that sounded good.
Cool. We're going to take it first try.
That's it. We're not doing that again.
So, like, if that was the start to a golf round, my intro would be like the first guy going up to the tee, putting his ball on the tee, and as he lines up, the wind knocks the ball right off his tee right before he swings and he doesn't notice it. That would be like what just happened with me. And then you rushed in, reset it for him. 'Cause I thought
you were going to go. And then
No. It was perfect. It was perfect. It was like golfer and caddy and the relationship that needs to exist. It was beautiful.
Oh man, I love it.
Yeah. So, thank you to everybody who's tuning in tonight, or today, depending on what time of day you're watching it. This is going to be the last day of January, and, we're recording this ahead of time, of course, 'cause that's how, we make this work. But this is episode 3 of the Reptile Room Podcast. And we still are getting the nuts and bolts figured out to bring guests on. We've got several pages of guests coming on, but in the meantime, there's plenty of content to bring to y'all. Yep. Yeah, and there's a few people who brought it up in YouTube videos and other podcasts, but you know, not too far back, a couple weeks ago, the Reptile Super Show in Anaheim happened. So I think we'll kind of touch base on that because I was able to make it out to that. And then since it's, you know, sort of relevant, we'll just bring up and sort of weasel on into the importance of shows and networking and being present in some of these community events like that. And just kind of roll with that for tonight's show. And then at the end, we will wrap it up with some of the developments that have been occurring over the last few weeks since you last heard from us, as far as what's coming down the pipeline for the show, as far as topics, guests, and everybody who's been chiming in. We're going to definitely touch on that. So we'll give you a little bit of foresight into what's to come. So, So we're going to give you that as our roadmap for tonight, try and keep it to like an hour or so. We'll see how that goes. You know how us reptile people are. We can certainly talk for days and days, especially, you know, when we're catching up, because to be completely honest, this is like a sort of friendly and social way for Andy and I to catch up. Yeah. And, by virtue of us recording it, we're trying to make it worth y'all's time to tune in because, you know, I'm terrible at catching up with people all the time. So this is actually kind of nice.
I'm bad. I'm bad at it, man.
Well, I mean, you have a family, you have a wife, you have kids. I have my life, I have my work, my job. You have a very serious job, everything as well. So, you know, nobody's like short of, you know, things to do, but I don't know. I guess I just feel like you have more excuse than I do.
Well, but as soon as we hit record though, it's like everything else just stops and then we can just focus on geeking out together, and that's so nice, man. It just takes away the stress of, you know, oh, these bills or this or that, that's on my mind. Like I can not think about that at all. I can just focus on what we're doing and have a good time and laugh and just, you know, share with what's going on in our lives. So, it has been a couple of weeks since we've had a chance to catch up, and thank you to everybody that listened to episode 2. You guys like demolished the numbers from episode 1.
Oh yeah.
Thank you so much for everybody for listening in. So hopefully episode 3 does even better and you guys enjoy the topic tonight. But yeah, so let's catch up. What you've been up to?
Oh man, I have been insanely busy with work. Just, you know, multiple projects going on at once and then just trying to keep track of what day it is because I don't have a normal I don't have a normal like weekend schedule, and when the entire world revolves around and like sort of a social understanding that Monday to Friday is the work week and Saturday and Sunday is the weekend, and then that's not your schedule, it's really hard to, well, it's just hard to juggle like everything that's going on. For whatever reason, it just jumbles things in my head a little bit more, and at the same time, it makes time go by much faster, so years go by really quick for me.
Is it because the weekend is when, like, you, like, at the zoo, you're going to have your most attendance during the weekend, so they want more of their keepers there?
I mean, we do have more attendance on the weekends, but the reason why it just happens to be irregular like that is because animals don't take the days off. So what they do is, and it seems to be sort of nationwide, is nobody has Saturday, Sunday weekends. Everybody has either Tuesday, Wednesdays, Friday, Saturdays, Sunday, Mondays, and that's kind of how it rolls. So that way there's always overlap. Everybody can be trained to cover certain areas, and there's always people there. And that's typically how it works. And so nobody has normal weekends, at least in the animal care department. So weekends mean nothing. You know, they take real good care of us as far as like paid time off and vacation time and this and that. But yeah, so it just, what it means is, as I'm trying to like keep track of the rest of the world's weekends and weekdays, because my life outside of work still revolves around that schedule, things just get so caught up, and they seem to speed on down the hill before I know what's going on, and like 6 months have passed. So
And you've been knocking out some pretty cool bills. I've been, just for everybody that hasn't seen some of the stuff, because you don't share some of those pictures publicly, do you? I haven't seen them.
Like, no, and it's new... not. Yeah, and it's not because like I'm not allowed to. Like, if I wanted to walk through the building and snap photos from the public side of you, that's fair game. I just can't share anything that wouldn't otherwise be publicly viewable, because just out of context, it can be taken away.
Yeah. That makes sense.
And
that's,
it's
cool stuff that you're doing. I think that's exciting. I guess you just don't really realize it as just the general public when you're on the opposite side of the glass to see like, hey, like this is, you know, an individual zookeeper that's putting their passion and their love and building this exhibit and making, you know, cool things, and kind of what we do on the bioactive side, on the hobby side, for people to realize that he's bringing that to the zoo side. And I think that's killer.
Yeah, I mean, inevitably everything becomes bioactive because, you know, feeder insects get loose, or we've got fruit flies and springtails and this and that culturing in the building, and crickets all over the place. And it just sort of happens, and we promote a lot of bioactive and healthy enclosures and you know, regular turnover of soil and nutrients in the reptile house lately, because it's just been, you know, big priority to turn things up and really get it brought up to forefront. And now my big project is alligators, so my focus has been on that lately. But that's the other side of things. And you know, since we've brought up my profession, I just want to make sure everybody listening knows that all of the views and opinions that you hear from me on this show specifically refer to my outside experiences and my personal opinions. I'm not, you know, on the show on behalf of my employer or anything like that. This is all separate. You know, not that I would ever say anything to tarnish anyone's reputation, but I just want to make it very clear that like the reason I don't share photos of things like that and any of my social media is because I like to keep a very professional distance between what I do in my personal life in the hobby and what I do professionally, although they seem to cross a lot of, they very much so overlap. It's just, I try not to, cross any boundaries that, you know, might seem controversial in any way. I just want to play it safe, and
better safe than sorry when it comes to conflict of interest in the legal corporate world. Oh my gosh, that could
And even if we get into the stuff that doesn't have any like, you know, legal precedence, there's just all sorts of opinions involved, and I just, you know, I agree with both sides of the fence, and of course I ride both sides of the fence, so I just try to stay neutral as a result. So but anyway, that's besides the point. We're going to flip to one side of the fence in particular tonight. And that's about reptile shows, conventions. And we'll sort of, we're going to focus on one show in particular because it's near and dear to both of our hearts, but it's sort of a great shining example of the power and the benefit and the fun of such a social gathering. So the Reptile Super Show that takes place in California, in Anaheim now, again, and Pomona and San Diego, about three times a year. The Anaheim-Pomona sector usually ends up being in January and August, and the one in San Diego is July, if I'm not mistaken. And Anaheim is a new thing because the January-Pomona show has gotten so big it outgrew its original venue. I do believe the fall-August series will be back in the Pomona section. I could be mistaken on that, so stay tuned for that. But ultimately, it's been growing for the last 13 years to be sort of the mainstay Reptile Super Show. Like, it's the big show in the country nowadays. Like, when you talk about big reptile shows, what do you think of? You think of the Reptile Super Show, you think of Tinley Park, you think of Daytona, and, you know, like, what else? Like, those are your big hitters, right?
Yeah, those are the big ones. Definitely on the West Coast. I mean, we're the Sacramento show, although it's a fantastic show, it's not quite up there in terms of the attendance and the number of vendors yet. But for Northern California, it's an awesome show. And then the Reptile Super Show just kind of, it just compounds that factor. And it's not just a regional show. It really truly is a West Coast show. And it stands at the forefront of the West Coast shows, no doubt about it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty heavy.
And I'm still mad that I didn't go.
Nah.
I might have a couple tears, folks, on this show.
You can't be down on yourself, man. It's cool still fun. Yeah, no, it's worth going, but, like, it happens twice a year, so.
I've missed it, though, like, the last two I've missed. Well, the last full 2 years, I have missed every show. Yeah, the August and January show. Yeah.
Dang. Well, I mean, it is what it is. Like, you have your life and you can only do so much. And ultimately, it keeps you from spending money. You know, that's the bottom line. You don't spend money. I mean, let's be real. How many times have you walked into a show and not walked out with an animal?
I can only count that once. I think it was only once that I've done that.
Yeah, I might be at like two or three now, because in recent years, I usually just go for like filming or to say hi to people or drop stuff off. But last time, I definitely did not make it to that ultimate goal. I actually came back with a little big thing. So,
oh boy, we'll get into that for sure.
Yeah, so. No, but that show was huge, man. It was in the Anaheim Convention Center near Disneyland. So everything from parking to food to the hotel was expensive. Although Super Show and Rami, hats off. You guys always do a good job of discounting the rooms or getting the hotel to discount the rooms for vendors. And I always seem to weasel my way into working for somebody. And lately it's been working with Brian. So, it was a good time, but yeah, man, we missed you there. It was fun. You would have had a great time walking around and then just hanging out at the booth.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, there's so many people there that haven't had a chance to meet that I either follow or we chit chat through Facebook or Instagram. And then also a bunch of other friends that I just haven't seen in a while. Cause there's, you know, Southern California breeders or a few people that have come across from back east in the Midwest to come to vend the show. I was really excited to see them. But I knew in the back of my head that it was super unlikely that I was going to be able to go even as far back as like 6 months ago. I was just looking at the numbers and I just went, you know, it's just financially, it just wouldn't have been a good idea to do it. And just, you know, it's so tough choice to make. So that just makes me even a little more fired up about, you know, 2020 and have a great year and put some of that, hopefully produce enough to where I can sell some stuff, put some stuff aside, pay off a little bit of debt for the snake room. And then, put some money aside for going to the big show.
So, speaking of which, what do you have planned for this season? What's your ultimate? What are you pairing? What are you hoping for?
All right. So, you caught me off guard. I was like, I thought we were past the catch up side. I thought we were going into the super show already. So
I reverted back.
You did, man.
Keep you on your toes.
And that's fine. That's good. It'll keep my mind young. So 2020, I've got, I got about a dozen pair of Rosie Bows that are going to go. They're all in
Brumby. Holy hell, a dozen?
Low number. I'm pretty sure it's a dozen pairs. And then I've got four different pairings of Florida King Snakes that are going to go. And then the jungles may not happen. Pretty bummed about that. We'll see if the young bucks decide to step up and not be little scared little wimps. If they can get it done, awesome. But I don't have an adult male to get it done. And then,
how old's your oldest male?
They're only a couple years old, but I've kept them small. I grow my jungles pretty slow. So we'll see how that goes. And then a coastal pairing. And then I was going to do a caramel zebra to a caramel, a Pos Super Caramel Zebra Jag pairing. And he's also young, and he's pretty neuro. Like, he got really stressed out. I mean, really stressed out about being paired up with something else. And I don't know if it had to do with just that sensory, the touch. But really stressed out. Like, I had to bring him back from the, it seemed like I was bringing him back from the dead, man. He was just like, anyway, it was weird. He seems to be okay right now, but, I'm not going to be pairing him up again until, later on, probably give him a month or two.
Some males just take it hard, dude. It's crazy.
Yeah. It was really odd. I mean, that's two males that are carpets that I was like, what the heck? Like, what just happened?
Yeah.
It was really odd. But so that's on the snake breeding side. I'm trying to think, what else do I have? Obviously, my Dumerils have been kind of, my primary female and my male have been back and forth for about the last couple months, you know, taking them in and out. The other female, I'm giving her probably the whole year off. I'm not going to rush her back to it. She just had a really rough litter last. We talked about it. It was all sucked and stillborn. So I'm like, you know what? I'm going to feed her up, let her recover really well, and that'll be it.
Rad.
And then that's going to be it for my 2020. Outside of the reptile thing, is just like an entirely new career that I just started like a couple weeks ago. So that's been crazy stressful, and like, it's a total shift in life. And that's kind of been another reason why we haven't recorded in a couple weeks, is it's like, holy crap. So that's getting started. Some new college courses, new certification courses getting started that I have to get prepared for May.
Dang, dude.
And it's like a public health safety certification stuff that I don't have a choice, and I got to pass, and I got to make it, or I'm going to be like calling you up for like nickels and dimes so I can feed the kids. No, I'm kidding. I'll be fine.
Send you some snakes to sell for you.
Yeah, exactly.
Sell these.
So that's life, man. That's it.
Yep. Right on. Yeah. That's cool. Well, did you want to just dive right into the show?
Yeah, I want to hear about the super show, damn it. I don't want to hear about my career change. I want to hear about what happened there. What did I miss out on?
Well, to be fair, I tend to miss out on quite a bit too. Especially as I'm, you know, doing a lot of the camera work for Brian and filming his interviews. Although
for people that don't know, he's talking about Brian Cusco of Triple B. He was doing some of the video stuff.
Yeah, so Brian always has a booth there, and he does lots of pretty amazing interviews with all sorts of people involved in the hobby at the shows, and anytime he's got animals on the table that need, you know, some of the macro focus going on, that's usually me behind the camera. And he took it a little bit easy. Oh, it's great. I love it, dude. I love the art of filmmaking. I love learning to pull focus. I shoot everything manual. I love learning different lenses and how it all rolls. And I have a good buddy of mine who comes out and we shoot a lot of macro stuff on black glass. We used to shoot like all sorts of macro shots on really tiny, like praying mantis and tiny spiders and baby tarantulas and stuff. Like, we really love doing that because it's a pretty fine art.
Yeah, definitely.
And so I really enjoy doing that, and it gives me an excuse to go down there, and you know, it helps Brian out.
Keeps you busy.
Yeah, absolutely. It keeps me involved in the scene too, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah,
exactly. Before the show moved to Anaheim, it was in Pomona, and it's been around for 13 years now, and I haven't missed that show in the last 6.5 years since I found out about it. And so,
yeah, rub it in.
Well, and I don't mean to say it in like, you know, you don't get like your Scooby snack badge or whatever the heck it is, you know, but,
for a gold star today, but it's not going to happen.
No, you failed. You'll get an aluminum foil gum wrapper star.
with the chewed up gum.
Yeah. How else is it going to stick to your denim jacket?
my corduroy pants.
Hey, don't be talking about them cords, bro.
All right, I won't, because I love them too.
yeah, for real, those are classy. No, but it very quickly became something important to me when I learned about it, and I learned about it when I was starting working in zoos. So very quickly I was amazed because of the dichotomy of what I was seeing between the two worlds all at the same time. They were both new to me and fresh at the same time. So I've been growing in those worlds for the last, you know, 10 years almost. And it's always great because there's a lot of friends that you only get to see when they're in that part of town, typically, because they also have families and, you know, in some cases other full-time jobs and whatnot. And so it's really fun. Like, when you get the opportunity to go, it's a bit of a reunion of sorts.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
You know, even if you're going there just to spend the day, a couple hours, shopping or not, or you're there for the weekend on the other side of the booth. So, and, you know, you and I both have been on both sides of the table more or less multiple times. And, you know, there's pros and cons to both. It's a lot of fun. But it's just kind of, it's interesting because while I'm filming, I don't get to see everything that goes on. Then I hear about it. And, you know, I heard there was an albino caiman there.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. Sim Container was right around the corner from us. So they brought a bunch of cool monitors. You know, Dan O'Leary had his table. He had baby mock vipers, the most unreal lineup of like fresh baby white lips and mangroves and rat snakes. And
he always brings it, man, at the super show.
Hands down, my favorite. Always. Yeah.
Always.
Yeah.
Every time without fail, like always has amazing stuff.
Yeah. 5 stars for,
I bet you wish you could have got something for variety. From him at that show.
Well, I did get something at his, at his booth.
That was the most unsmooth way of segueing into that.
I acquired a dream snake.
Yeah.
I picked up my holy grail of pythons, an Apodora papuana. It turned out to be a male, which, according to Dan, is harder to come by in anything other than babies. When it's babies, if they come in, it's 50-50 shot. When it's anything bigger than babies, 9 times out of 10, it's a female. So I feel really? Very fortunate. Yeah, yeah.
Huh.
And he's a blessing, man. He's a very healthy, beautiful snake. He's getting darker. I think he's nearing his first shed, and he will
be... The scalation on their heads and the contrast of that, of the actual skin color, is unbelievable. If you guys aren't following Riley, by the way, on Instagram or Facebook, you guys need to go do that so you can see video and pictures of the snake. It's incredible.
So the skin under their scales is black. So every scale is pronounced with this black edging, more so on the face and the rest of the body. And what they actually fire up, and that seems to be a thing with reptiles from Papua New Guinea, is geckos, lizards, frogs, they'll like fire up and down. And
well, even retics too, which are
kind
of close, right? I mean,
I mean, they're in that same region of the world. Why wouldn't they? Like, if it's a beneficial behavior to exhibit for survival in the wild, and multiple species has developed it, you know, why not?
You're making me want to go open up that topic list and go add that, because that's a really cool topic to talk. You know, why
do it?
That's crazy.
Do all it. Right, go ahead.
Keep going. Keep talking.
Yeah. So I picked up that guy. He's a little baby, still had his umbilical slit, so he's like super fresh baby. But he had shed with Dan and eaten for him a few times, and he's here in quarantine. He's eaten multiple times for me. He's getting dark. He's near a shed. And I actually, unfortunately, had a little baby children's python of my own production here that was being a stubborn feeder pass away. It just wouldn't eat no matter what application of food, scenting, you know, approach that I tried, and it just didn't make it. And I offered it to him, you know, waste not, want not. Any stillborn babies or offspring that pass away, if it's of healthy reasons and nothing infectious, I offer them to some of the animals that are known to be snake eaters in this collection, such as the Kribos. And now that I have this Papuan python, he's on that list, and I wanted to see what he would do. It was a little tiny baby, and after giving him a few minutes, he ate it.
and like super gentle, like, oh yeah, I think I will take this and enjoy it. Like, that was cool.
Yeah, there was some noticeable pattern change.
I hope people don't get upset about that either, though.
That's why you don't see me posting it.
Yeah. Yep. But it's okay to talk about it. And I think people need to understand that. I mean, this is a natural prey item, and it's, if anything, beneficial to that animal to have an opportunity for its digestive system to process something that's it's built to do. So people, you know, if you kind of cringe or get offended by that, don't just kind of open up your mind a little bit, try to take a step back and really think about what it is that it's naturally doing, and it's eating a natural prey item. It's really nothing.
Yeah. I mean, we're doing it because it is something that seemed to be natural. I remember reading a study about indigo snakes' gut contents being studied from wild specimens, and nearly 50% of their gut content included snake prey. And, you know, if you extrapolate to that to the entire dry Marcon genus, you can, you know, safely say that that entire genus is known for snake eating. King cobras, ophiophagus are, you know, exactly named for that. So when we're looking at a private sector bottleneck of food options, anything we can do to add diversity to their diet in a natural variety, in a healthy way, like, it should at least be considered. And I had the opportunity, the snake that was deceased, you know, died of non-infectious means, and it was of production. It was hatched and produced in this room I'm sitting in recording right now. It never left this facility at all. And, you know, couldn't be a cleaner snake, prey item to feed to it. And it was really interesting to see his tongue pattern change and his thinking going on before he decided to actually try and take it. And then he ate it. So it was interesting. I don't plan on feeding him many snakes. You know, it'll be opportunistic when I have them. You know, the creepers tend to get them too. And, you know, that's part of, you know, breeding snakes, unfortunately.
I mean, they're hard to come by. And I mean, and this is another thing that we've talked, you and I have talked about, and along with other people, is the breeding of snakes for the purpose of feeders. So,
yeah,
don't have a lot of them, obviously, they're, you know, your opportunities to feed are going to go down quite a bit. So anyway,
and that's like a whole nother thing we'll get into one day, because that has to be approached delicately.
Yes.
You know.
Yeah, we got to plan that one. I think we got to discuss it ahead of time and just really go over an outline really well.
Yeah.
And really come at it with a good, logical, and intelligent way that is going to educate folks. Because I've never fed another snake a snake. But mm-hmm. there's species that I want to keep that it's going to mm-hmm. benefit them. So it's going to be an opportunity for me to learn, and it could be an opportunity for us to bring in a guest that's going to be, you know, even say more of an expert or more experience with that. And so, yeah, we'll get there. We'll get into that. So anyway,
yeah, some of your king snakes might, but yeah, anyway. So there were tons of amazing booths, and Todd had like, dude, four tables of some of the most epic lineup of carpets. I just, any chance I got to break away between interviews, I was just over there staring at all of those jungles. He had reduced pattern Darwins, and he had a bunch of Exantic stuff, and he had like five or six different zebra granites that were all, you know, very different, but nothing but zebra granites, and they were beautiful. Wow. And just, dude, there were tons of animals everywhere, like retics, monitors. There were lots of beaded lizards. Sim Container had Bell's Phase Lace Monitor there, you know, that one of their guys was walking around with that part of the time during the show. And man, it's for people who love a variety of reptiles, you can really kind of see a lot of that there. Croc monitors, you know, there's not much venomous because California doesn't allow that, but every so often you find yourself with a show that allows a venomous display, like the Zach show does, but this wasn't one of them. But
and that might be venue specific too, or that particular city or county.
Certain counties. So, yeah, absolutely. So, so the difference between the Anaheim show and Pomona was that this time they moved it to Anaheim because they needed more space. The last couple of years, it's just outgrown it. The Pomona show, there's two buildings on site that they would use. The August one being smaller gets a smaller building. The January one gets the bigger building. Well, the last January show was so nutty. It was just like too crowded. Too many people, parking was overflowing, it was just hectic, like the hotels were full, like it was nuts. And so they moved to Anaheim specifically for more space. The building is now 3 acres, and they had it's nuts. They had like 400 different tables and over 250 different vendors, and it was just huge, and they raised tons of money for USARC in the auction, because that always gets cracking. It was tons of fun, and it was just an all-around good time. And what was noticeably different is that you had so much more room to walk between all the aisles. When I specifically remember the day when I arrived during setup, the fire marshal was there. She had her like digital laser measuring device, and she was measuring the gaps between all the booths to make sure they were to code. And she was satisfied as she was going through. And then on show days, both days, you had tons of room. People with strollers, you could stretch out. Nobody's running into each other. There was nobody like sweating over having too many people around. You had time to just sit and talk to people. And it almost made a lot of people feel like it was slow and quiet. So, it was crazy, dude. It was really bizarre, but from hearing all the numbers afterwards, it was another record-breaking show. So I think they're going to keep doing it because it really kicked butt. The only downside is if anybody who's listening, who is involved in the coordination of that show, because it's around Disneyland, everything's expensive, right? We get it. It's Anaheim, it's Southern California. But for vendors to have to pay $18 to pull up into the back to load up to their show every single day is a load of you know what. And then because there's only a couple hotels there and they all charge valet, there's no other public parking. You have to like drive quarter mile, half a mile down somewhere to find like another paid parking garage. You're going to have to pay valet. It's $31 a night. Dude, if you're just there visiting and you've just like driven in, or you've flown in, or like say you're there locally, but you're paying for the booth, that's hundreds of dollars just on parking and like, and the hotel room, dude, it's nutty. It's like very different from what Pomona is like. So that's a reality check. I mean, that's just life. Life is expensive down there, and that's just how it is. No dig to anybody involved, but like, you got to find a way to compensate vendors. Like if you want vendors to keep coming back to that big show, you better find a way to make it worth their while.
But, $36 just in parking for both days. That's crazy. And that's just that. That's not including the hotels and everything else that goes along with it. And even if I was going to go, just to go for the weekend, I knew that if I went just by myself, not including my son, or if we did the whole family thing, I was potentially looking at, after gas and hotel and everything, close to $1,000 weekend.
Yeah, easily. It was ridiculous, dude. I spent twice as much.
There's no way I would have left there without any new Rosy Boas or some new Lampropeltis or something.
I saw a lot of those, actually. I saw a lot of cool Rosies.
Don't tell me.
I won't, because I didn't
talk about it.
I didn't stop long enough to read any of the labels, but I saw them. They were there, and I
trust me. I had people messaging me going, "Hey, so there's this here. Hey, so there's this here." Travis was doing it a couple times.
Yeah.
I was like, "Would you just stop?"
Yeah, there was a lot of cool stuff, man.
Like, let me pout all by myself here and sulk in the corner of my house, and you guys have a good time. Just ignore me for the weekend.
I mean, I picked up my pop one Friday, like, within the first 15 minutes of walking in the door. So as soon as I did that, I turned the blinders on.
Yeah.
Then, like, inevitably people came by, and I started filming for them at the table, and I was just like, I started looking around everywhere and started thinking about White Lips and Todd's Boots. I kept finding myself back looking at carpets, and it's just killing me. You know, there are some beautiful berms roaming around there, and lots of scrubs here and there. And I love me some mangroves. You know, they're beautiful, but I shouldn't. You know, to be honest, I need to, like, decrease things. And it's been great because I've been able to sell some babies here and there, but I need to ultimately, like, I'm thinking, you know, the poplin pythons. I just got to be prepared. That's a big snake.
Uh-oh.
So.
Yep.
Anyway. But, yeah. So, that show was sweet. There was a lot of cool animals. You would have loved the Rosies.
Well, that was obviously
the
coolest for you, though, right? I mean, that's,
it was.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that I've wanted one of those for a long time. So, but getting past and looking through the animals and the cool stuff you see, because you're going to see stuff all the time, and every year it's more groundbreaking. There's new stuff, new displays, new morphs being put out if you're into that world, new localities are being brought in or being produced for the first time, or new vendors are coming out from the East Coast to the West Coast for the first time. Like, it was the first time Sim Container was there, so that was pretty cool. First time Sea Serpents was there, so that was really awesome. I love sea serpents. I owe them an order for some more hatchling racks pretty quick here. So it's really cool to at least just stay up on what's going on by attending these shows. But, like, if we were to sit here and tell you that if you're, you know, not in the market for buying something, you need to go to the show, and you were to ask why, Andy, what, you know, give me, like, the first hands down, like, important reason to you why a show is, like, valuable to attend if you're planning on being involved in the community.
I just started vending just a few years ago, just because I've always wanted to do it. And now that I've had a chance to do it, I think I enjoy going to the shows just as a buyer / spectator, more often than not a buyer, just because of that opportunity that you have to network with a lot of the other breeders that they will soon become friends. I mean, you know, you can't expect a instant friendship with everybody because they're busy. And a lot of times people need to understand, you know, they're there to sell animals, and if they're running a business, and but it is still an opportunity to where you can see, like, hey, what's going on? It's good to see you. And it expands the hobby. It gives people that platform. There's only so much you can do online. You know, there's only so much interaction that you can do online. And it's just very impersonal and not, you have an opportunity to see exactly what it is that you're buying. You look at the health, look at the color, look at what it is that you want. And a lot of times you might strike out, and there's nothing wrong with striking out at a show and just having that self-control to say, you know what, maybe the next time, or planning on it. And if, like, in your instance, if that was something that you were like, you know what, this is what I'm after, and you're holding your tongue, and you're holding your wallet, and you're waiting, and that opportunity finally arises. And lucky for you, you were already going, right? But you also build that friendship and relationship with somebody like, let's say, Dan, where you have that opportunity to be like, hey, if something like this comes up, I want in on that opportunity, and enough for them to trust you to say, okay, no problem. I think that you can do that a lot easier in person at a reptile show. And there's so many reptile shows in California. And so for everybody else that's listening, if you have a reptile show, if there's only 10 vendors, go pay the $5-$10, walk in there. The only way that those reptile shows are going to get bigger is by attending and by sharing it. And if you walk in and you see nothing that you like, at the very least, go shake some hands and go say hi, go make a new friend.
Right.
Talk about their projects, and you may not be excited about their projects, but they might. And you might not know about a project that they have that's a secret that all of a sudden they share with you that you're really excited about, and boom, you got an instant friendship like that. And you're not going to get that unless you get yourself out there. And that's hard for me to say, because I have a hard time getting out there and chatting with people. And even if I'm behind the table, I have a hard time. I have to almost force myself to kind of get to that point where, you know, I'm opening up and talking to more folks. But I love being behind the table too, because it gives me a chance to see little kids and talk to them. Being a dad, I can relate to that stage, knowing, you know, where I was at that age, and now having kids and getting them excited. And if you know what, they might bring, oh, look what I just bought. And it could be a normal ball python that they bought from four tables down. And you know what? That's so cool to just get excited with them and just feed that passion with your excitement and your love. And if it's somebody walking around with a little snake that they just got, like, hey, cool snake. Hey, you know, you can tell when it's a new keeper or a newbie. At least I think I can.
Maybe we
all act like newbies, but you can kind of tell sometimes when it's like, oh dude, I bet you that's his first snake or her first snake. And just give them that, like, that little, like, walking by and being like, hey, that's an awesome animal, congratulations on your new animal. And just like, boom, just like walk by, and it's like you leave that lasting impression, like,
oh,
that's,
yeah,
that's our opportunity to grow that community. This is our community. It's our responsibility to make sure that it stays a positive community. You know, and I'm not talking like fake positivity. I'm talking about real, like, heartfelt,
sure,
positivity, that it's like, okay, we want that little kid to grow up and, you know, 30, 40 years still be keeping. We got to show them what it's about and let them get excited, us get excited about it. Even if we're not really excited about maybe a normal ball python, but they don't, you know, it's all right. I get excited just seeing their smiles and, you know, trying to teach them something. You know, they might learn something. It might give you an opportunity to share a tidbit of wisdom. I think shows are an amazing way to do that, though, is just reach out to so many more people versus online. Getting stuck behind the keyboard, I think, just really, I don't think it does as much for the hobby as reptile shows do, because of the simple fact of just meeting people in person, looking at them in their eye, listening to what they have to say, and having that opportunity to share stories and wisdom or whatever the case might be. I just think it happens more so at an actual reptile show. I mean, that's how I got hooked. I mean, if I would have just kept my couple snakes that I got from a pet store and that was it, I may have never gotten more. When my world opened up to a reptile show, the first one I'd ever gone to was in San Jose. At the time, it was Herp World Expo. And this was, man, I'm aging myself. But I remember just like, holy crap. Like, whoa, there's a lot of animals in here. And at the time it was, you know, king snakes and rosy boas and corn snakes, sure, and, you know, ball pythons, berms, and, you know, all of the things that you can see even nowadays.
Right.
You were seeing back then, not quite as extravagant in terms of morphs or colors and stuff like that quite yet, but there was still some pretty amazing stuff out there. So, that got me hooked. I was like, oh, I want that. Oh, I want that. It is everything that you are not going to see at a PetSmart and a Petco and even your local mom and pop shop. If you have a great reptile shop, I do not mean to cast a negative light on your shop, because you probably have, you know, you're just like a retail super show, basically, if you have a really
good, yeah,
shop. Anyway, But you know what I mean. It's like you're right. only going to get your basic animals at most of the pet stores that people go to. And when you walk
sure.
through the big old doors and you see all those people, and oh man, it opens up your eyes to a whole new world, and it's a great opportunity to hook this hobby, get more people hooked on it.
Yeah, and one of the biggest things that you dropped in there, and it was just one word, was networking. And whether that means you're on the selling side of the table or the purchasing side of the table, you at least get your face involved in networking. Doesn't mean you're just necessarily trying to build a clientele for, you know, future businesses. It's also just relationship building in this sense. And then it sort of envelops the whole community aspect of it, because you get to know everybody. You get to realize that although, yeah, the digital world is important because it ties you to everybody and gives you a quick avenue to communicate, nothing is better than, like you said, that in-person sort of discussion, getting to chat, pick each other's brains, spend a weekend hanging out, looking at stuff, nerding out, and really just vibing well. And you sort of just get to figure out who people are, and you understand everyone better, and it ultimately brings much more of like the right thing to the community, whatever that, you know, you want to define as. But
yeah, I know it could be a complicated, it's whatever you want it to be, really, honestly. I mean,
yeah, and if you're
gravitate towards like-minded people, you're going to gravitate towards people, and they're going to navigate toward, you know, towards you if you're putting off the kind of vibe that they want to have in their life too. It's kind of weird how that works out, but that's a lot easier to do in person versus online.
Yeah, I mean, it's always better in person versus online, because you can really just get the inflections that you don't otherwise, you know, get in a digital form. And, you know, it's way more agreeable to just sit there and look at that snake and have a conversation one-on-one and be like, man, this is why I do like it. Man, this is why I don't like it. Man, fair enough. Hey, you want a beer? You want a hot dog? Let's go over here. You know, like you can do that at shows. Like that's really cool, because it's just, you know, there's no harsh feelings about it. There's no like misinterpreting like what they're getting at. And it's just very different. And, you know, from a buyer's aspect, you can really get to meet breeders and really get to see what they're about. You can meet other folks that are there doing the same thing you are. But if you're on the back end of the table and you're there vending, you're going to meet other vendors. You're going to get to know who else is doing the same thing you are. Most of those people happily like take the shirt off their backs to help you if you ever need a hand during those shows. So whatever side you're on, you're going to make friends if you're just like open and enjoying yourself. And it's definitely worth it. Even if you're just going there to go and experience it, not necessarily buy anything. Even if you keep a couple animals, at least make it like a trip where you load up on bedding or light bulbs or supplies that you need a couple times a year, because typically things are on sale. And so just make it worth your time that way. You don't have to bring animals home. You don't have to do anything, but you know, it's definitely worth going and immersing yourself in that culture, because it's a ton of fun. And if you just are authentically there and inject yourself in with the right people, you'll have even more fun.
And that's the best place to spend your money too. And I hate to be kind of a negative Nancy on corporate America sometimes, but I mean, I would rather spend my money, and I try to make it a point, like for instance, when Sensational Pets from Santa Barbara, when they're at a show and I need dry goods, I don't care if it's a water bowl or if it's 10 bags of bedding or if it's one bag of bedding and a light bulb, like I will go out of my way and go, I know that I'm going to need that in like 1 month or in 3 months or whatever, and spend the $20 or $40 or $100 or however much I need to spend. I'd rather spend it with them. I don't want to have to go to a corporate store. I'm not going to name names. I don't want to be like that. But do you know what I mean? Does that make sense? And so like people kind of get that in their mind, like, hey, go to the show and don't go, oh, well, how much can I get it for on Amazon? Spend the extra $2 and $3. You're there. You're most likely actually going to get it cheaper. And you're going to be, you know, they're going to start remembering you as a customer. You know, you're going to, the more you spend, it kind of works that way. It's like you spend money with some of these different places, whether it be an animal breeder or supplies vendor or whatever it might be.
Right.
They remember their customers. I mean, those guys are busy all day long, especially the dry goods vendors. I don't know what it was like there, but.
Oh, it was hectic.
I'm sure it was hectic. I'm sure that.
Yeah, no, we sold out of things left and right. We would sell out on the first day, and like, it was completely you know, unforeseen, because we thought we would sell out of something else. So we loaded up on that. And, you know, that just sort of, it was just crazy. But like, you brought up a really good point that I didn't even think about. And that's when you go to these shows, you're voting with your dollar by going there and spending with different booths, because a lot of these shops put the time in to go to these shows. And the nice thing is, the reptile community, you have Zilla, you have Exoterra, you have Zoomed, you have like a lot of these big companies, and they're there and they're advertising their products. Typically they have booths, but they're not showing anything that they're selling. Right. They're showing things that is their latest products and what's out there. And they will point you in the direction of vendors that are at the shows, like Sensational Pets or whoever, depending on where your show is at. And they're going to point you in the direction of one of their local distributors or vendors, which is usually a shop that's local to you. And oftentimes that's a homegrown, like local mom and pop type shop, like Sensational Pets. Like Sean started that and ran it for 14 years and did an amazing job, and then sold it to his newfound predecessor, who's taken it over and continuing on this like super positive, healthy, organic train of just serving the community and keeping on the same business plan. And it's doing really well. And the more people support shops like that, the more they hear what you're looking for, which is the right products at the prices that you find are worth spending your money. And ultimately you're shaping the community. And so you have those opportunities at those trade shows, because the vendors and the manufacturers are there. They're paying attention to what those vendors sell. Like they revisit at the end of the show when everybody's packing up, like, how'd it go? How'd you do? What'd you sell out of? Like they're gauging everything like that. So when all of their, you know, shops that are at these shows are like, oh, we sold out of all this bedding, or we didn't sell a single one of these, or we had a bunch of complaints with this, or da 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 da, they change their game plan based on that feedback. So it's really important in a lot of ways. And regardless of where you stand, you can really have a good time and change the hobby for the better just by participating. So, yeah. I mean, it's just, it's absolutely worth it in so many ways. Typically, if it's your first time going to a show, just bring a friend and have a good time. Yep. Even if you don't, you're still going to have a good time.
Yep. And bring some extra money.
Yeah, you're going to be tempted. I mean, I hate to like tell people that, like, so don't be impulsive in your purchases. Just know that like you'll be tempted. There's a lot of stuff there. It's everything you want. God. It's in the candy store. That's a whole nother episode, is impulse buying and how it affects like pet tubing and health, hoarding, and all these other symptoms that come as a result of just like being overloaded from what you'll see. That's the other side of a show, is that there's a lot and it's all in your face and you're going to want to buy it all, and you can't, and you shouldn't. Yep. So,
yeah. You know what's, oh my goodness, this is what's crazy, is we're almost up at an hour right now. And like it seems like we've just barely scratched the surface of everything that we wanted to talk about. But, the funny thing is that so now kind of switching to being behind the table, I think it's important to understand as a buyer coming into the show that although it is important for you to come to the shows and, you know, spend money, and if there's something specific you're looking for, I had a friend recently who was looking for a red tegu, hit me up before the show. Hey, do you know anybody? He knows that I don't know, or that I don't have red tegus, but he's like, hey, I know you're going to be at the show. Hey, I know you know some friends. Would you happen to know anybody that has red tegus? You know, put the word out for me or something. You know, that's the cool thing about networking and having an opportunity, because he might come back to me in 6 months or a year and say, hey, I want to buy one of your animals. Or somebody else that I just referred them to is going to then come around and refer maybe one of their customers to me as for an opportunity for a sale. Being behind the table is one of the hardest things I've had to experience at a reptile show too, because I've had a few shows where I sold nothing.
Yeah.
So I'm putting my, you know, I'm putting my wallet into making sure that this hobby, you know, continues by saying, you know what, I want to be a breeder and I want to vend the shows. I want to support the local shows. And so, you know, I have to put my money where my mouth is at. And when I'm saying support the local shows, you got to do it as a vendor too. And sometimes I've been super reluctant to be like, oh, I really, you know, sometimes I just can't do it because I don't have any animals available. Like right now,
right,
I'm not going to be doing any shows until I start producing some animals again. I haven't had a successful year now for a bit. So it's like, okay, I got to wait there's no point in me trying to book shows and then sit there with three animals and hope that I make a sale.
Right.
But there are times though that I think we have to talk about the etiquette for a buyer. Mm. I know that there's some YouTube videos out there and there's some, it depends on how you say it, I guess. And some people can get offended or whatever, but I mean, you can't just go up to a table and, you know, we could be friends or whatever. Like if you're vending at a show and I'm not vending at a show, I'm going to swing by. And if you're busy with a customer and I'm gonna be like, hey, what's up, dude? And I'm going to go walk around because you're busy with a customer. You're trying to make a sale. I'm not going to be like, hey, what's going on? And then I'm monopolizing all of your time.
Sure.
When a customer might be right next to me trying to get an opportunity to ask that question, like, hey, when was the last time this animal ate? Hey, I'm really interested in this animal, but I'm not giving them that opportunity because I'm taking up all of your time.
Right.
So,
yeah.
So I think as friends and buyers, even if you, whether you know the vendor or don't know the vendor, try to be respectful of the other people that are around you. Don't get in the habit of looking to your left and to your right. And if there's kids that want to see something and you're a big 6'2" guy that can look over the child, step back, let the kid get in front of you to look,
For sure.
If it's a mom and a kid, you know, step away for a second. You know, if you're really interested in an animal, don't lollygag. I'm going to give you that word of advice right now. It's happened to me many, many times. If you're a buyer, I'm a vendor and you come to me and you say, I'm really interested in the animal. That's great. I'm glad you are, but I'm not going to put it aside and hold it for you.
Oh, I'll come back. I'm going to do a lap, but yeah, I'll be right back. Yeah. Famous last words. We've all heard that a bajillion times.
Yeah, I've done that to myself as a buyer where I've gone, I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm really, really, really interested in that animal. I don't have it in me to ask the vendor, hey, can you hold it for me? If I'm going to have somebody hold it for me, I'm going to put money down on it.
Yeah.
But if I'm going to put money down on it, I'm just going to say, you know what? I'm just going to go ahead and buy it.
Yeah. If you're going to
do it all the way, you know, but if you're going to take that chance to say, wow, okay, hey, I acknowledge that that's a killer animal. I really like it. I'm going to go look around, which is, hey, you have the right to do that as a buyer.
Sure.
Go ahead and go, but don't get pissed off at me when you come back and it's gone. Oh, what? Why'd you sell it? What do you mean? Why'd I sell it? First come, first serve.
Yeah, just know that, like, if you're listening to this as a buyer and that happens to you, it's no hard feelings. But
no hard feelings, yeah.
If you walk away saying, I'll be back, and you haven't put any money down, we have no guarantee you're coming back. We're not going to sit around and, like, pass up other sales because you said you're coming back. Your word, as much as we want to, you know, be nice and give you participation trophies, your word means nothing. It means nothing until you put money behind it. And like, that doesn't mean it's all about money in this industry. No.
No,
but if we're there selling a snake, and so what if it's our livelihood? What if some of us do this for feeding our kids? What if we don't? I mean, it doesn't matter. The point is just, you know, don't waste people's time. Be polite about it. And like, you know what a good, healthy approach is? If you don't have the money on you and you don't have any way of paying for it, in like PayPal or anything immediately, don't even bring it up. Don't even speak on it. Just say beautiful snake and keep it moving. Like look at it. Don't say it. Don't even engage in conversation about it. Just don't.
If the other thing I wanted to touch on too is in terms of, so the care of an animal, there is a place for it. I think it is a responsibility as vendors to make sure that the people that they're selling to are responsible and that are capable of caring for an animal.
Mm.
If that person knows more than you, the breeder, awesome. I mean, that's like perfect scenario. Like, okay, great. I'm basically another breeder.
Dude, that's great.
Yeah. But there's times where I'm like, oh crap, this little 12-year-old boy should not be walking around with that gorgeous Burmese python. Like, I was one of those kids that was like, yeah, I want a berm. I knew what I was getting myself into, and so did my dad, thankfully. I mean, the guy that I bought my berm from, my first berm, he didn't ask me any questions. I was just like, he's awesome. He's beautiful. I want him. Sure, no problem. Boom, I pulled out my cash and I bought it. I was freaking 12. I'm like 13. I was 13 when I bought my first berm. So, I mean, Like, that should not be happening. Like, that, yeah. That should not be happening. We need to be a little better on that, end as vendors, I think.
Yeah,
whether it's
online
or in person, it doesn't matter. I think we need to do our due diligence and making sure that the people we're selling to, that we set them up for success. If it's a first-time keeper and they're buying a carpet python or a ball python or whatever, you know, let's make sure that that we give them a good foundation to succeed as a keeper.
Sure.
And not make us look bad as a hobby either. That's what frustrates me is kids and or adults, whatever, first time keepers. I should just say that, first time keepers getting into a species that they know nothing about, but it's beautiful. And it's like, did you research it at all? Like, do you even know what you're keeping?
Yeah, there's a lot of rattlesnakes that are beautiful.
Exactly. I mean, I want some again. Anyway,
I got offered a pair of adult speckles the other day. I had to turn it down. It was not good.
Yeah, speckles are amazing.
I know, and they produce blue babies. It's not good. I'm still not sure I said no yet. Anyway. But there's a lot of responsibility that comes into play from being on the back end of the table, and it's just.
But also, it's like the day and age that we are in now, there should be absolutely zero excuse for anybody going to a reptile show, like, and pulling up a care sheet, like, right then, right there. If you're looking at a ball python, you had no idea what a ball python is, and you're like, you know what, I want a ball python. Open up your phone. Do a freaking Google search. If the vendor's busy and he's talking to somebody else, just do a quick Google search, and I can guarantee you, you're going to find probably a couple of dozen care sheets and figure out, okay, can you accomplish that as a responsible snake keeper? Yes or no?
Right.
If the answer is yes, which it should be, I mean, all of us can do it, then go for it. But man, do your homework, folks. Come on.
Yeah,
right? I mean, I'm not asking that much, right?
No, that's tough. The problem is there's just so many new generations that come in. So there's new generations that have to go through the same learning curves that we all do. So it's one of those points that, like, we have to keep making sure is, like, out in, you know, out there for new folks.
I'm not that patient.
No, I'm not either. So, like, we've said our piece, and we'll let, you know, the next wave of podcasts take the next generation. But, so... definitely shows are worth the time, worth the networking on whatever side you end up being in. And it's a good time. It's worth going to. You're going to make a lot of lifelong friends. You're going to learn a ton. You're going to experience some really cool animals. You're going to see a network and community of people that support each other through even some of the toughest times.
Yeah,
you know,
definitely.
Hats off to USARC and all of these other organizations that have gotten started and involved with some of the various charities and health support for those involved in our community when they needed it the most. So it's worth it.
What's your top five shows that you like in California? I mean, I can only go off of what I've experienced in California. I haven't ventured outside the state lines yet.
Well, the January Pomona show is always, like, the most fun, and I get to reconnect with the most people. The August, I guess I should say the January Anaheim. So why don't I call it the January Super Show, and mm-hmm. then the August Super Show. I don't quite make it out to the San Diego Super Show as much as I used to, although that's a ton of fun. And then I used to go to the Orange County Fairplex shows quite a bit. I haven't been to those in years. I like the NorCal Reptile Expo. That's usually out in, like, Pleasanton, I think.
Yeah.
The San Jose show was great. I haven't been enough to been to enough of the Reptilian Nation shows, so I'm sure those probably aren't too far off. But, you know, there's probably only five or six shows, huh? Seven, maybe?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot more now in the last couple of years than there have been before, but yeah, for sure. Like
SAC show. How can I forget?
Yeah, the SAC show. I don't know. I
lived
didn't want
there.
To throw you under the bus, and I didn't
I
want to make
myself.
Fun of you.
Sacramento show, for sure. Top three.
Yeah. I was going to call you a bunch of names, but
as far as the state goes, you know, I haven't been to Tinley Park, and don't you dare call me names. I call myself names.
and I just agree.
Yeah.
But yeah, Tinley, I want to go bad. Bad.
Yeah, we should make a pilgrimage one of these days.
Let's do it. There's a lot of pilgrimages that we're supposed to be making somehow this year. I don't know how we're going to do it, man, but
yeah, it would be fun. I don't either. I'm going to Florida in 2 weeks, and then I mean, I have a week that I've budgeted off for my birthday in June, so maybe we'll just, you know, we'll just figure out something to do in June.
There we go. I like that idea.
We'll go herping or something somewhere. That'd be fun.
That would be fun.
Go to
that
Texas or Arizona, fun. Find some rattlesnakes.
Heck yeah. We'll get Brats to come.
Oh, get yeah.
He wants to go to Texas, right?
Yeah, we'll hit West Texas. He can go looking for Alterna.
Yeah.
And we'll find some Western Diamondbacks.
Justin wanted to do something too. I just don't know. I can't remember. He was mentioning... I can't remember where he wanted to go.
As long as there are cigars involved, he will be fine.
He'll show up.
Yes.
Yeah, good point.
As long as he can get like two a day, he'll be good.
I'll bring him something. I have no idea what the hell I'd buy him, but it'd probably be like something he'd gag on.
Oh, I'm sure we can find some in whatever state we're in and just, you know, stop somewhere. I'm sure.
No, I'll send him money. I'm like, bring your own.
Oh, that's true. He works at a shop. That's true. So, but we're at just over an hour, and in closing, we'll probably take it beyond an hour. But so one of the things that we keep speaking on in our shows is our little suggestion platform on the website where you can submit it right in this form that we get directly on our emails. We've been getting quite a few of them. And seeing a lot of, thank you, everyone. We've been getting a lot of really great suggestions. There hasn't been a bad suggestion in there, which is fantastic. I'm not surprised. Everybody has their own, you know, sort of niche of things that they like out in the community. So we're getting to see that. And it's surprising. I'm seeing a lot of suggestions for like dwarf monitor topics and guests and things like that. So that'll definitely be coming down the pipeline. But there's been too many people to thank, like, all in a list. Like, it would take a while to go through it all, but we definitely wanted to, like, throw out, you know, a handful of some of these suggested topics to just keep encouraging people to send them in, because we are listening, we are writing them down, we have spreadsheets going, we have, you know, everybody who's sending us suggestions, we're putting in your suggestions, we're putting who sent them to us, any little notes that are important, so we can go back to this, because it went from the suggestion at the starting point to being instantly overwhelmed with too many all at once. So
I know it was nuts. Like, oh my God, you look at the list now and it's like, oh,
it was a great problem to have. As soon as we told people like, hey, send us your suggestions, we're sitting there like, oh, what about this? And what about this? And we'll add this and we'll add this. And then like check the email and there's like 10. We're like, holy crap. And next thing you know, we add those in and then there's more. And then we add more. And next thing you know, our list is like 40, 50, 60. It just keeps going.
It's long. Yeah.
So thank you for that.
Which is great. I mean, we're going to be busy for a while. So
yeah. So
it's a good thing.
So we're definitely going to hit on some dwarf monitor stuff at some point. A lot of people want to talk about that. But a guy local to me, Alan Stevens, I want to try and convince him to break away from the family and come on. He's got a cool collection, among other things, because honestly, he's one of those guys that has an eclectic collection we'll have to bring on, because he's got tons of red lye. He's got a lot of cool lizards and monitors and really cool tastes and just a lot of reptiles. But we want to bring him on to talk about some cool weather Asian species, because he's got at least one pair of really, really unique like Asian rat snakes that I can't pronounce or remember their names. They're very unique. They're crazy looking. I don't even know what they are. Like, they're super exotic. So we'll get him on. He's local to me. I've got a cage for him over here that I need to get to him anyway. So
awesome.
I'll twist his arm with that. And then we've got a couple requests for rosy boas from Jennifer Shoemaker and Kevin Bowling. And there was no way we would not hit on that topic with you being, you know, one of the hosts.
I'm just biding my time. I'm trying to be patient. I'm just being patient.
Well, and there's,
but I want to bring somebody on, though.
Well, we'll do both, man. Or multiple of, you know, there's, I mean, obviously when you have a couple morphs and you have tons of localities and you have the history involved behind them. There's endless amounts of discussion that can evolve beyond that. So it certainly will exceed multiple episodes. So we'll make it happen multiple times for sure. So we'll get some Rosie Boa talk along the way. Kenny and Sambo is too. Those things have also been sort of grown in popularity again. There's lots and lots of morphs, lots of different varieties. There's now things like rough scaled sand boas. There's a couple localities. Yeah, there's different species. Yeah, yeah, people are digging them, man. They're cool.
They like them.
Digging, pun intended. Haha. Dad jokes for y'all. We'll make that segment one day.
Horrible dad joke.
Yeah. Coming from a dad, that means a lot. Yeah.
And I'm laughing too. So
yeah. and then we will continue the Reptile Room theme as per the name of the show, in many ways. So not only will Andy and I continue our one-on-one segment where we bring that up from time to time and just keep going as we sort of, keep switching up the topic and keeping it fresh. We don't want to like delve into the same thing over and over again. So we'll bring it in when we need to switch it up or when new developments arise. But we've had actually some suggestions from people on reptile room management related topics after the episode, other things that they want elaborated on or their own take on things or some other great pieces of equipment. So Cameron Bradshaw mentioned he'd like more discussion on reptile room heating options. And I think that's fantastic because there's so much that goes into the variables that are at play when you're heating, whether it be the room, ambient, the individual enclosure or rack heating options, overhead, belly heat, incandescent, ceramics, heat tape versus heat cable, you know, oil filled heaters, gas heaters, like electric, everything. Like there's so much that goes into that. So we'll definitely get on to that. And then I sort of had my mind blown and like the nerd inside of me got really excited today when Ryan Presto hit me up and he sent me a series of messages and great photos of different equipment that he uses to regulate the ambient temperature of his room, calibrating his thermostats, which is something that I think I probably just fried a few people's circuits in their heads by saying that. Yes, I said it, calibrating your thermostats. So sometimes they go astray and they lose their accuracy, or sometimes they never were accurate and you have to bring them back in, or they need to be sent for replacement, which is something that's kind of scary considering you're putting the animals' lives in the hands of your equipment and relying on it. So we'll get into that. And he's got a lot of other awesome pieces of equipment that he sent me links to and photos of that he implements to maintain the safety, security, and up to date to the second management of his animals. And it's pretty high tech, and which is funny because when he was telling me about it, he was very humble about it, calling himself a rookie and this and that. And he's been keeping the species and he's like, I've been keeping these for this many years. And he's been keeping animals for a long time, but he's like considering himself a rookie. He hasn't bred anything really in the last couple of years. And I think that's hilarious because you don't have to be a breeder to be experienced in reptile keeping. And just his messages and the equipment he uses and everything he was sharing with me shows that he knows his stuff. So I'm really excited to eventually pick his brain. No timeline on any of all of this. Of course, we're going to sort of roll with this as we go. And just, you know, keep it coming. But again, it'll still be every other week. So you can expect more 2 weeks into February. And as you're listening to this, this is the last day of January 2020. So with that.
Well, no. It's
keep going.
This will be the 29th.
Will it?
Yeah. No, this one's going to air on the 29th. And then we'll have. So then we're going to record again and then air on the,
cause we did the first and then we did
the 15th and then the 29th. So we're, our plan was every other week on Wednesday. So it'll be, I heard you earlier say this is the last day of January and I was like, oh, I'm going to let it fly. I'm just going to let it
slip. You just let me hang. Okay.
Just let you hang. But the second time I went, okay, and then the dad in me was like, look, kid, I got to correct you. No, I'm kidding.
Two more days in January, I lied to everyone. Deal with it.
Yeah.
This is your Uncle Riley lying to you. best thing that ever happened to you. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas and deal with it. So yeah. The 29th, so this episode you're hearing is on January 29th, and then we have February 12th and the 26th that we have yet to record, but we will get that figured out very soon, folks. So yeah.
Yeah.
We got a lot, man. We have a lot to talk about. Holy mackerel.
Yeah, and I think it should be.
I can't believe I doubted. Like, I was like, oh, what the hell are we going to talk about? And then, like you just said, like that list just all of a sudden just compounded exponentially so fast. And I was like, okay, never mind.
You know, most people underestimate themselves when they're involved in reptiles with how much they can talk. So we can talk.
Yeah, we can.
But I think we're able to bring guests on because we just need that new upgrade to our subscription if we don't have it in already, right?
Yeah. So we haven't. One of the things that we wanted to do, and I think that in our little drunken escapade with Joe on From the Ground Up, I'm not necessarily encouraging everybody to go listen to it, as I made a complete ass of myself on that one. But we really wanted to get Dan from DM Exotics as our first guest on our show. We both hold Dan, in such high regard and everything that he does for the hobby and has done for a long time. But he's on vacation. So we're kind of like, okay, on this next episode, do we record with a guest but air it later until we have a chance to... I'd love to have Dan as our first guest, but I don't know how important that is. And I don't know if I'm just hanging on that for no reason. Also, I don't know.
Well, we can talk about it tomorrow or the next day or something like that, but we'll revisit that subject. I think we can pull it off, but if we do aim for that, it just might mean that everybody has to listen to you and I ramble on a little bit more.
That's true.
In order to avoid people from hurting themselves listening to us ramble on forever because they've realized they made a horrible mistake subscribing to this podcast.
Why did we subscribe to these two? Why?
These guys are idiots. No, but all jokes aside, we will figure that out outside of this. And one way or another, there's going to be a show. The show must go on. It's just you might be able to call us liars. You might not.
Just need to figure out the recording guests part, which we don't quite have figured out, folks, and that's what we need to we just need to solidify that. If we get that,
I have a plan to test it. If we can do the upgrade, I think I can ask somebody in the next room over to just be like, let's try this out, and I think we'll iron it out.
Okay, perfect.
Yeah, bam steal the van. So
and that if that works, then I'd like to also then add another person because it's supposed to be an unlimited number of guests and at the next level that we upgrade to.
Fantastic.
So it's just that it's just making that financial decision. Okay, we have to pull the trigger, we have to upgrade for it, and then at that point test it all out, listen to the recordings, make sure it sounds good. I wanted to mention that, and I forgot to put that on our outline to just mention it. If anybody out there has some feedback, how are we sounding? We need to know. Like, I definitely feel like I've only had one person tell me that, like, hey, the volume was a little off on something. But if we definitely just want to make sure that it's a good listening experience, that it's fun because you can hear us. If you can't hear us and you're struggling, I think you're going to probably end up shutting it off, which we don't want you to do. We want you to listen to us and hear what we have to say, you know, because we're so important in this world, you know?
Oh yeah. Top shelf, bro.
Yeah. Right. Top shelf. That's right. So anyway, if anybody out there, has experienced any weird audio issues, please let us know. We definitely would prefer that we know now, try to fix it. Moving forward, we appreciate it. We're still learning. We're still trying to get this whole flow figured out, but
for sure,
it's been fun, man. I'm having a good time. I'm glad we finally got connected again. It's been a crazy last hectic couple weeks, and it's like, oh, this is nice. Yeah. This is nice.
Well, don't let it get too casual because I'm about to be in Florida for a few days, so we might want to keep this train rolling soon. So but yeah, we'll talk.
All right.
But yeah, no, it's been a ton of fun, and I can't wait to keep going. So, you know, thank you to everybody. If you've made it this far, you're an hour and 20 minutes just about into episode 3. And that means we're still making good on our promises, and we hope to catch you all for episode 4. Be sure to look up the Reptile Room Podcast on Instagram, Facebook, under the Reptile Room Podcast. You can find us at the website at thereptileroompodcast.com. There's like the whole email suggestion form there where you can send any show ideas or guest topics. Same thing with the Facebook page. You can hit us up there, share photos, anything. Just, you know, let's make it fun. So reach out to us. Andy, is there anything else that I forgot?
You can find me at Area Reptiles on Instagram, and you can find me at Andy Ray Reptiles on Facebook. And again, just to clarify, on our website, reptileroompodcast.com, there's a link where there's a couple links on the page where you have, where if you hover over it, it'll say topic suggestion form, and you click that, and it's a really easy, intuitive form. You put in your name, put in your email, what is your topic, if you have a guest suggestion. Super easy to do. We encourage everybody to do it. One of these days, maybe we'll do like a snapshot of what we see on our end of what you put out there. We won't share anybody's private email ever. We won't do anything like that. That's kept just between Riley and I, just so that we can respond back to you personally if we have additional questions, or we want to engage you some more, so that maybe when we do bring up that topic, we can bring in your specific questions and answer those specific questions on the show. So definitely, you know, share your email with us, and it really is just so that we can communicate with you on a personal level. And where can people find you, Riley?
I am able to be found on Instagram under Riley's_reptiles, on Facebook under Riley's Reptiles, YouTube under Riley Jimison. The website is actually still at rileysreptiles.weebly.com, because I am cheap and don't want to pay for the domain yet. And I forgot about my website, not gonna lie. But yeah, I think that's about it otherwise. Yeah, well, with that, we bid y'all adieu. Thank you for tuning into to episode 3, and we'll catch you in 2 weeks.
Adios. 2 weeks. All right, folks. Adios.
Peace.